sense. Does this mean that war, crime, and violence among humans is unavoidable? It would not be fair to go that far, but the evidence of violence in those species most closely linked to our own suggests that humanity will have to work very hard indeed at overcoming its genetic inheritance if we are going to live in peace or continue to live. This Moment of Science comes from Indiana University. Today's program was prepared by William Oram with help from Kevin Hunt in anthropology. I'm Yael Cassander.
In sports, the NBA Finals get underway tonight in Los Angeles. The Lakers have home court advantage for the first two games before the best-of-seven championship series moves to Orlando for at least two, more likely three games. If games six and seven are needed, they will be played back in Los Angeles. Pittsburgh will be out to even the best-of-seven Stanley Cup Finals at two games apiece when they host Detroit tonight. The NCAA wants to give schools an economic break. College sports' largest governing body says it will suspend membership dues for the next school year. It also hopes to save about $500,000 by holding most of its future committee meetings in Indianapolis. The Chicago White Sox are trying for a split of their four-game series with the worst team in the American League this afternoon. The Oakland Athletics were 21-30 going into this afternoon's game, while the Sox were 25-27. In the bottom of the sixth, Oakland leads the Sox. The score, 4-0. Again, that's the bottom of the sixth. Chris Carpenter looks to continue his career best start tonight when the St. Louis Cardinals wrap up a four-game series against Cincinnati. Carpenter is 3-0. And the Chicago Cubs ace Carlos Zambrano is slated to make his first start tonight after serving a suspension and missing his team's flight to Atlanta. Zambrano was suspended for six games after his meltdown in a 5-2 home win over Pittsburgh. He hasn't earned a victory since May 3rd. He's one win away from reaching 100 in his career. That's sports.
Support for today's broadcast comes from the Yoga Institute of Champaign-Urbana, offering beginner-level instruction in Iyengar yoga and special classes for men, women, teens, seniors, knees, low back, neck, shoulders, and plus sizes. New classes start the first week of June. Information at 344-YOGA or on the web at yoga-cu.com.
It's 2:43. Coming up this afternoon at 3 on The World from PRI, President Obama addressed the Islamic world from Cairo today. We'll hear highlights of the president's speech, along with local reaction from Egypt, Lebanon, Afghanistan, and Iran. Also, journalist John Hockenberry recalls his trip to Iran 20 years ago after the death of the Ayatollah Khomeini. That and the rest of the day's news coming up today on The World at 3 o'clock. Pat Quinn had a certain advantage when he became governor. He wasn't Rod Blagojevich. That alone was enough for him to win the praise of lawmakers and elected officials. Hopes were high for the new governor to help restore the state's tattered image. He was also tasked with balancing a ballooning deficit. 4 months later, the governor is still receiving praise for cooperating with the legislature, but reviews of his job performance as governor are decidedly mixed. Todd Feuer reports.
When Pat Quinn took over for deposed and widely despised former Governor Rod Blagojevich, Democrats and Republicans alike welcomed him with open arms. They gave him a standing ovation at his inauguration.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Elected officials pledged to work with Quinn to address the state's budget crisis, pass a major construction program to spark the economy, and enact ethics reforms to repair the state's public image. Attorney General Lisa Madigan summed up the beliefs of many people in Springfield at the time.
I think Pat Quinn is going to do all that he can to restore integrity to the state of Illinois, and he's going to have everybody in elected office helping him do that.
But since then, many of the predictions for Quinn's tenure fell flat. Lawmakers have left town without passing a full budget for next year, a $28 billion construction program is on hold, and most of the ethics reforms recommended by Quinn's Reform Commission have been watered down by the legislature. Even so, most lawmakers are still hailing Quinn for being cooperative and much more honest than his predecessor. Blagojevich was notorious for not returning legislators' calls, and lawmakers were so distrustful of Blagojevich that they made him sign memorandums of understanding to finalize deals. In contrast, Quinn from the outset has attended legislative caucus meetings, and his office has an open-door policy. House Democrat Dan Burke of Chicago says Quinn's performance thus far bodes well for the future of Illinois.
I'm actually encouraged and quite excited about the future with this governor, having gone through an unfortunate 6 years with the previous guy. I'm impressed with the way he interacts with people, his communication skills, and his persona in general as being one that we can depend on.
While this type of praise is widespread, some are questioning his ability to lead as chief executive. Quinn has been involved with state politics for more than a quarter century, including stints as a grassroots advocate and state treasurer. But House Republican Susie Bassey of Palatine says it appears Quinn was not prepared for the responsibility of the governor's office.
I think Governor Quinn is a really nice man. I think he's honest. I think he's hardworking. I don't think he has a clue as to how government works at this point. Bless his heart.
Bassey says Quinn and his staff fell short when it came to pushing his agenda, and Republicans aren't the only ones saying Quinn didn't do enough to achieve his goals. House Democrat Julie Hamus of Evanston praises Quinn and the reform commission he formed for aiming the spotlight on issues like campaign finance reform. But Hamus faults Quinn for taking a naive step by appointing only government outsiders to the commission. She says Quinn should not have relied on them to get their specific proposals enacted into law.
I think one of the things that he probably learned is not to hand off a big agenda to people who may or may not even know how to work this process or know how rough and tumble this process can be. We're not that welcoming of reforms.
Lawmakers back campaign limits that were much more lenient than those suggested by the Reform Commission, and a number of other proposals were rejected outright. Another victim of legislative rejection is Quinn's spending plan, which relies on increasing the income tax. It was easily defeated in the House. Many observers say Quinn's fellow top Democrats did not do enough to help Quinn get his budget passed and perhaps purposefully sabotaged or undermined him. House Republican leader Tom Cross predicts Quinn will be more aggressive about his plans.
I think he's realizing now that his party kind of pulled a fast one over him and not trying to help him. And you're going to see a more aggressive governor over the next few weeks.
Cross isn't the only one suggesting a more assertive approach for Quinn. Kent Redfield, a political science professor at the University of Illinois at Springfield, agrees Quinn deferred too much to the House Speaker and the Senate President to get his plans approved.
I don't think that the best strategy is to kind of rely on the kindness of the legislative leaders, even though they're from the same party.
But Redfield points out Quinn is in a difficult spot and has one big disadvantage compared to other governors. Although Quinn has been able to enjoy a honeymoon with voters and lawmakers because he replaced the unpopular Blagojevich, he got a late start and immediately faced a national economic downturn. Also, because Quinn wasn't elected governor, he can't claim the same popular mandate that most new governors enjoy. Nonetheless, Redfield says going forward, Quinn needs to be more assertive in wielding the power that comes with his office. That power will be put to the test the next few weeks and months as Quinn seeks to hammer out a budget deal with sparring Democratic and Republican lawmakers. I'm Todd Fuhrer.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on Illinois Public Media, AM 580, a listener-supported broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois. Droughts are nothing new for the western U.S., but lately some parts of the country surrounded by water have had a taste of drought. Rebecca Williams reports some experts say as our population grows, we're going to have to learn to live with less water.
Even in swampy, muggy Florida, people have been running out of water.
This is the first time the well has ever gone dry.
Ellen Peterson can remember water gushing out of her artesian well when she'd hook up the hose. These days, she's stuck with rusty water from her shallow well.
No, if I let that sit, it would settle out orange.
We visited Peterson at the tail end of this year's dry season. In the weeks since then, Florida has been pummeled by major thunderstorms. But Florida water managers say it's too early to know how much the rain will help. This was the driest dry season Florida's felt in more than 75 years. And it's the third year in a row of serious drought. That's meant some changes for people who live here. A lot of cities have put rules in place that limit watering lawns to 1 or 2 days a week. One woman actually ended up with a warrant out for her arrest after she watered her lawn on the wrong day and didn't pay the fine. Some cities in Florida are talking about adding a drought surcharge to bills for people using the most water. Ellen Peterson says local water managers have even been capping wells. Peterson may be 85 years old, but that didn't stop her from telling her local official to back off.
They told me that they were going to come cap my well, and I threatened the guy with his life if he ever came back. So it didn't happen yet. Hasn't happened yet.
So it's not such an easy sell to get people to cut back on water. But that's Gary Ritter's job. He's a water manager in the Lake Okeechobee area. It's a giant lake, 35 miles wide, and it's nicknamed the Liquid Heart of the Everglades. The lake level is 2.5 feet below average.
For water to get to the Everglades, it has to come from Lake Okeechobee. Now we have a juggling act as to how we manage this water in the system, you know, for the multiple users, for the water supply, and for the ecosystem.
The lake's the center of a huge tug of war. Farmers and cities need the water, and the lake's also a big tourist draw. And the Everglades are in major trouble, mostly because the water flow to this fragile area has been cut off by people. Some experts say these kinds of conflicts are just going to get worse. Peter Glick is president of the Pacific Institute. It's a nonpartisan group that studies water issues.
Places that we didn't think were vulnerable to water shortages in the past are now increasingly vulnerable as our population continues to grow and our water supply doesn't. As more and more people try to share that fixed resource, there's going to be growing competition for water and more both natural and man-made drought.
And he says we just don't know what's in store for us as the climate changes because of global warming. We could get a 1-2 punch. First, from weird new weather patterns causing surprise droughts. And second, from more and more people moving into dry areas. People have expected these kinds of problems for cities in the desert Southwest, but nobody really saw this coming in the Southeast. Peter Glick says even if you live in a place surrounded by water now, you shouldn't expect to always have plenty of it. For the Environment Report, I'm Rebecca Williams.
Support for the Environment Report comes from the Park Foundation, the George Gund Foundation, and the Gaylord and Dorothy Donnelly Foundation. You can find more information and share your thoughts at environmentreport.org.
When University of Illinois journalism students started planning their trip to Romania for a foreign reporting class, journalism professor and former AM 580 reporter Matt Ehrlich, who also hosted the afternoon magazine Once Upon a Time, decided to go along for personal reasons. He's of Romanian and Hungarian ancestry, and the students' visit to Cluj gave him a chance to seek out records and places important to his family. He spoke to student reporter Brianna Coco Marx about finding some of those places.
I actually knew the address. I was just trying to find any other records that they might have had. And so a couple of our Romanian hosts were very generous in taking me to the Jewish Community Center. There is a Jewish Community Center in Cluj. And then we went to the one of the Jewish cemeteries in Cluj, which has fallen into disrepair and overgrowth. But we spent probably the better part of an hour searching for the grave plot of where my great-grandmother and possibly my great-grandfather as well were buried. And this involved getting down on hands and knees, taking brushes, trying to clean the dirt off gravestones and trying to find the number, because that's all there seemed to be, and we weren't able to find it. On to where my grandparents lived, my grandmother Ehrlich and my grandfather Ehrlich. Apparently is the childhood home of my grandmother, which I had heard her talk about while she was still living. And that seems to be abandoned now, assuming it's the right address, but I was able to photograph that as well. And so seems to have been a very tight-knit family, a very tight-knit community back in the years around World War I and into the 1920s, where they lived, you know, and worked in very close proximity to each other. And now it's the place where my grandparents lived and had a millinery store where my Aunt Martha was born is now a bar, which is fine, called the King Bar because it's right next to where the King was born of King Hungary. And very bustling, full of life. It's near the university, so lots of college students around and lots of tourists around. And it was a good experience.
Matt Ehrlich's genealogy adventure in Romania is among the audio postcards University of Illinois students are sending as they complete a documentary on the emerging Eastern European nation. You'll be able to hear that documentary on AM 580 next month. You can also read their stories at our website, will.illinois.edu/Romania. It's 5 minutes before 3 o'clock. Coming up next time on Sidetrack, we'll remember local musician Jay Bennett, former member of the band's Titanic Love Affair, and Wilco. We'll talk to a professional mermaid, and we'll hear about a man who records sound for a living and his quest to find, quote, one square inch of silence. Join host Jason Croft for those stories and more this month on Sidetrack, Saturday evening at 6 p.m. here on AM 580, FM 90.9, HD2, and online at will.illinois.edu.
Earth and Sky.
Thursday, June 4th. Tomorrow morning, the planet Venus will be at its greatest distance west of the sun for all of this year.
In other words, Venus is now shining prominently in the east before dawn. Astronomers call this a greatest elongation of Venus.
Venus will be the brightest star-like object in the eastern pre-dawn sky. It's quite close to another much fainter planet, Mars, throughout June 2009. Look for a little reddish dot near the very bright object in the pre-dawn sky. At its greatest morning elongation, Venus typically rises about 3 hours before sunrise.
For the Northern Hemisphere, though, tomorrow's greatest elongation finds Venus unusually low in the morning sky, up only about 2 hours before the sun. Meanwhile, at middle latitudes in the Southern Hemisphere, the view is better, with Venus rising nearly 4 hours before sunrise around now. Venus is the second planet outward from the sun. It's called an inferior planet because its orbit lies inside Earth's orbit. Because of this, this inner world can never be opposite or 180 degrees from the sun as seen from Earth.
As a result, Venus can only appear in the west after sunset or in the east before sunrise. So no matter where you are on Earth, look for Venus, a blazing planet in the east before dawn. I'm Joel Block.
And I'm Deborah Bird for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org. This will be a big year for decisions.
There'll be a lot going on, and you'll need to stay on top of all of it.
AM 580 is here to help, but we need your support. Be one of 250 people to call on June 11th, our one-day Thursday fun drive.
You can call then and renew your membership or make a first-time gift.
Your support means more of the news and information you expect from AM 580. You can also give online right now at willpledge.org. And thanks.
Thanks for listening to WILL, Illinois Public Media. This is WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3, Urbana. It's 2 minutes before 3 o'clock. The forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon.